Talking about diversification, you started exploring business acquisitions instead of more rentals. Why did you start exploring business acquisition?
Oh, unintentional. And it was maybe a shiny object chase.
Yeah.
But I very quickly saw the cash flow potential, which a lot of the past couple years of buying commercial stuff, it has not been cash flow intent behind the price. It was more long-term. Hey, let it float, let it make a little bit of money, not lose money, but 15, 20 years from now when it's paid off.
It's a maturity
off,
right? Thing. Yeah.
So I saw the cash flow potential and I was like, that would be great for our business, mm-hmm. right? Let's throw in a little bit more cash flow.
When you say our business.
Me and my dad.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have Shubin LLC.
Mm-hmm.
And that holds all our real estate.
Okay.
And then I still have a couple pieces with just Rachel, my wife, which is my kid's college fund.
Yeah, there you go.
And then one other office building that I own with a partner who brought it to me and we own it.
Yeah.
What was the original question?
The business acquisition.
Okay. Yeah.
So the real estate is like your thing.
Yeah.
And you started exploring the business acquisition world. And I guess the question is that's pretty different. So why did you transition? And you started saying cash flow. And mm-hmm. I totally understand. Like the apartments we own, we don't take money from the apartments.
Mm-hmm.
They just keep growing in value. People paying down the note. It's just kind of out of sight, out of mind. It just keeps growing.
Yeah.
We have a property manager. But business acquisition, you were saying, was cash flow. So I guess the question is, what kind of got you into looking at more business acquisition than increasing the rental market?
Because I like toys.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is what I mean by I stumbled into it. I have too many toys, too many hobbies,
yeah.
mountain bike. I mean, you name it.
Right.
My mindset is, though, I don't want to have to pay for it. So how can I have something I want to enjoy but someone else pay for it for me?
Yep, smart.
My appreciation for heavy equipment is exponentially higher than the normal person because I have done so much manual labor in my life.
Yeah.
That I know what it takes to shovel gravel or dirt or put in an irrigation system manually by hand. Like, right? Like I've done that multiple times in my life.
Right.
And so the first time I got exposed to hop into a Mini X or a Bobcat and see like, oh my gosh, I just pushed a lever and I just saved myself 3 hours. Mm. Like, right.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, we kind of dive into Kidtopia and kind of where all this came from. So, we live on the most unique street in the world, but it's one lane, five houses, dead end. And we're the second to last house. And across from us, the neighbor owns 5 acres of woods.
Mm.
And he's been there 45 years. And wow. I told him when we bought 10 years ago, if you ever move, I'd love that land. And he paid $12,000 for it, like 20 years ago. I was like, I'd love to have it. He goes, all right, cool. Middle of last year, he goes, hey, we're in our 80s. We're going to move in with my daughter in Savannah. So we're selling the house. It's three parcels. So the house in 1 acre and then two other parcels. And I said, well, I don't really want the house, but I would love the land. He goes, I don't know if we're going to sell the land. Fast forward, he goes, all right, we're selling it all together. I was like, well, I don't need the house. And like, that's a $400,000-something house. Like, I just want the land. He goes, well, it's all or nothing. I was like, thanks. First world problems, right?
Yeah, sure. Because
like, we have set ourselves up to where we're able to do that. And so we buy it from them, obviously not wanting to float a $500,000 note altogether.
Right.
So, but I didn't want to put the house directly on market because I want to pick my neighbors, right?
Sure.
So I'm showing, like, we were under contract for 90 days. I'm showing it to friends that, like, you want to buy this.
Yeah.
It's only a 3-bedroom. So ended up closing on it, and I have a tenant in there now.
So you own the house.
I own the house and the land.
And you're renting the house to someone.
Yep. And it's just, he's in there until I find a friend. So I've got contractors coming in, like, hey, how much is it to build it out into a 4-3? Or, you know, because that's all the feedback I got. Hey, we love it. We want it, but we're growing our family.
We can't grow into this house.
So that's the process I'm in now.
Yeah.
Switch over to the land side. It's just beautiful. Walking trails through it. And growing up, I remember my parents always had like the yard to play in, which I just thought, hey, that's super cool. Now I know as a parent, they did that so they knew where I was.
Sure.
So I went out getting in trouble because I was absolutely looking for trouble.
Right.
So I said, I want to do the same thing. If my kids are anything like me, we're going to have a lot of trouble. So
yeah,
I'm going to clear out an acre of it. So I started looking, hey, I want to rent a piece of equipment and clear it out. Well, I don't want to just do it in a weekend. I want to sit on the equipment for 2 months. It's going to be $8,000-$10,000 to rent this equipment for 2 months. And I was like, I don't even have a plan yet. So right. I was like, okay, let's go to Facebook Marketplace. Let me buy a used Bobcat, use it, sell it, and break even.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of snowballed into, well, you can get a brand new one for 0% down, 0% interest for 5 years. And so then I'm like, well, here's my payment. I knew what it takes to rent it. So, And it was like, I mean, the break even was like, rent it 2 days, 2.5 days. And so started before I bought anything. This was like, this is the difference between Blake in 2025 and Blake 10 years ago. Mm. Blake 10 years ago would have bought it that second, right?
Sure.
Now I've slowed myself down a little bit.
That's good.
And called 15, 20 landscapers I knew. Do you rent equipment? What do you rent? If I had it, would you rent it from me? Got enough yeses to, I went and bought the equipment that worked for me, but also they would rent, kind of got soft commits, and then bought it. And we've scaled up. So I say me and my dad scaled up to, we bought a truck, two more trailers, or three trailers, dump trailer as well, and then three pieces of equipment, like 9 or 10 attachments. And they stay rented. Like for
you're not able to use them.
Well, the first 3 months I couldn't even clear my land because it was booked the whole time.
Really?
Yeah. Which was, you know, great problem to have because we're making ridiculous amounts of cash coming in. But I'm also like, wait a minute, I got to go rent a piece of equipment so I can go clear
my stuff. Yeah.
It's full circle. So so that's transitioned, and I love playing on them. I was on it yesterday. Like, just I love playing on them. And so that's
good.
Being in that world has led to other people knowing what I do. And opportunity arising, right? And so activity breeds opportunity. So I'm sitting at a closing table. The other realtor's like, hey, I saw what you're doing. Do you want to buy an equipment rental company? I thought I was joking.
Yeah.
Of course I do. Yeah. So we're 4 months in going through the due diligence process of underwriting this local equipment rental company. And we're making an offer next week. We'll see what happens.
That's going to be great. So,
yeah. Long answer to your question. But that's
I think it's great. So when you're... So you like this equipment rental space, but I know that other businesses are obviously on the table for as far as you buy. What is the number one thing you look for when acquiring a business right now?
Assets versus debt.
Okay.
Right. And this one has exposed a lot of that. Again, I haven't underwritten a lot of businesses, but the one I did before this was pest control, which was very, very different. So equipment rental is very asset heavy.
Yeah.
And comes with a lot of debt, right? What's that ratio? What's the value of the assets versus the debt held? I don't love that model really as much as pest control, because what are your assets in pest control? A pump sprayer and some chemicals?
Maybe a truck?
Yeah, maybe a truck. And then you've got contracts on an annual basis. It's just, I mean, talk about a cash flow business. Like if I am to get crazy serious about what's just the best business model that I want to buy, the pest control's the answer, really. I just love big equipment. And there's opportunity there. It's not like it's bad. It's just, it's a different type of business. Right. So,
all right. So that's my next question.
Yeah.
If I said you have one income stream and you're going to have to scale it to 7 figures in 12 months, what would that be?
My realtor business. Yeah, because it's got the most traction, it's got the most systems, it's got the most people involved, and I've got a very clear path on how to do that if I decide to execute.
That's good. Tell me about this. What is, let's talk about the portfolio as a whole.
Yeah.
So you've got rental, I mean, I don't even think I know. So like, give me, what are you dealing with as far as ownership, as far as rentals, businesses, things like that? Kind of break that down for me as best you can.
18 to 20 properties,
okay.
Somewhere around there. No more than 3 or 4 single family.
Okay.
Probably, and it's total probably 90-ish, 95 units, right? I would say.
Whoa, go back. How many? 95 units?
95 unit total.
Okay. Yeah. How much of that is owned by you and your dad or
partners? Probably 60 units.
Or you and your dad.
Yeah. The rest is that office building that I bought with the other partner.
That's right.
Yep.
Okay.
So that's a big portion of it. And then we've got some small multi, so anywhere from duplex to that 10 unit.
Yeah.
And then, so that's residential, commercial. And we've got retail in Pelham that's three tenants, but five units. Some retail in Roebuck. We got some more commercial. Yeah.
So of those units that you own, tell me about the cash flow. You don't have to give me numbers, but mm-hmm. like you got 95 units that are someone's paying rent every month. Mm-hmm. How much of that cash flow are y'all taking and like putting in your pocket? Are you putting any of that? None of it. Of the 95, zero.
Never have.
So all that is just building. Are you taking the cash flow and putting it in a business like you and your dad said, 60 units? Are you taking that cash flow and just putting that in a business coffer so that you can go buy other stuff?
Yeah. We've got an operating account, a rental account, security deposit account. Operating accounts, hey, let's go buy a trailer for 3 acres rental company.
Gotcha.
So that funds that. Hey, we've got an investor client who is looking for private money. We've got the operating account. Hey, he's looking for X. We've got it. Boom, loan it out.
Let's do it.
So that's kind of our catch-all money. The rental account is directly related to, hey, this property has 10% maintenance held back or CapEx held back. Mm-hmm. That's what that is. So we don't really touch that.
Yeah, can't. HVAC goes down.
Yeah. You've got to have those reserves in there. Yeah. I mean, the people who say, hey, my principal, interest, taxes, and insurance is $1,200 and the tenant's paying $1,500 and I've got some cash flow. Wrong. No, you've got to factor those.
You got no cash flow.
So, so we've never taken any money. It's just snowballed, right? And it's just given us opportunity to do things that we wouldn't have otherwise been able to do.
And it builds on that builds mm-hmm. and helps you do the next thing.
It does. Yeah.
So a lot of hustling in the life of Blake, a lot of hustling from the equipment rental to the real estate, to the realtor business. Is there a specific moment when you stopped thinking like a quote hustler and started thinking more CEO?
It started with that first coach in 2017.
Tell me about that.
He came in and he said, hey, you're doing a lot of things and going nowhere quick.
Mm.
Right? You're on an island and you're building 7 bridges 1 foot at a time going 3 miles away to shore. Go pick 2 bridges to build and they're going to go a lot faster and a lot quicker. And pick the ones that you like the most. It doesn't matter which one. Any which one you decide to start working on is going to succeed, but you're doing too many and none of them are going to succeed. You're never going to make it. Yeah. And one of those, so we picked 2. So it was bigger investment, so commercial, multifamily, and then real estate. Yeah. So stop flipping, stop being a contractor for people. Yeah. I hated that. Oh gosh, I was so bad at it. And it was just these 2 things. And then he said, okay, we've picked those. Now let's hire somebody. Got to hire somebody and offload all the stuff. And that's where the concept of that time audit came into place of, hey, what are you doing? Every 15 minutes for a week, write it down. And let's separate the things that you shouldn't be doing at all or you should hire out for and just focus on the things that you're great at that you should be doing. So that was huge. That was a big change in my business.
Let's talk about the coach. So you had a coach in 2017 and you transitioned. I think you transitioned to another coach.
I did. Yeah. So he actually worked for a coaching company and he was a recruiter, not a coach.
Okay.
And at first he was like, great, this is the company I work for. I was like, no, I want you because you've checked in with me for 5 years. Had never tried to sell me on anything. He just, how's the family? He went through dating Rachel to getting married to he was there. He became a friend.
Right.
And so that was a big part of it. It was like, no, man, I just want you. You know my life. You know how I work. And so he was there for probably right under 2 years. And then he said, hey, I'm holding you back. Like, I can only give you some. You need tools and systems that this platform I work for can give you.
Yeah.
He said, I'm firing myself. Like, I'm out. Right. You need some. And so he got me into that. I did that one for a couple of years. It was great. Kind of ran its course.
Sure. Most of them do.
Yeah.
Well, 2 years is a long time.
Here's what happened is, and I like this model, is the coaches there are active agents. They're team leads that have built it and done it. I got to the point, and this is not tooting my own horn, but I was doing more than my coach.
Mm.
And so I was like, everything you're telling me works to get to this size, but I need a more successful coach so I know what to do because you hadn't been there. And their answer was, you should become a coach. And I was like, I don't want to be a coach.
I don't want to be a coach.
Yeah. So I left there. And I said, I've been in kind of real estate specific, that was real estate specific coaching. I want kind of high level. And Ben Chenault, who owns a mortgage bank here in town, the biggest lender in town, he said, hey, I've been in Dan Sullivan's coaching program, strategic coach, for a couple years. I think you should do it. And Ben's just, I need to introduce y'all. Just
I love that.
Wildly successful. And I was, and again, just kind of blindly just, hey, if you've gotten to where you are and you listen to this guy, count me in. So I looked into it and they had, I might've told you this is wild. This is, I think it was 2021 or 22, whatever my biggest year in sales, just because of COVID and just because of the market, nothing I was doing, got me to the minimum threshold to be in the highest kind of class course.
Yeah.
And so I pull up, it's in Chicago once a quarter. So I go for 2 years, once a quarter in Chicago. I am by far the least successful, poorest person in the room. I mean, other guys are taking their private jets to this course.
That's unbelievable.
And I'm there like, man, I was like Southwest back of the plane.
That's right.
I'm just barely here, bro.
The C class. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just happy to be here. And so and it was like drinking from a fire hose and just the, and their whole concept, they have nothing to do with real estate. Everything to do with business owners and getting yourself out of your own business and letting it run itself and going much farther than you could ever take it. Mm. That's their whole concept. And so I did that for 2 years and just, again, drinking from a fire hose, learned a ton. I think you've read some of their books.
Yeah, I read two of them, yeah.
And just great stuff. So the coach I had, unfortunately, was not Dan. You've got to pay like, I think it's like
gazillions of dollars.
So much money a year to get in front of Dan. I'm not there. But I had another coach who just wildly successful. He has 11 kids. And just hearing him, just his energy for life is just, it's amazing. Wow. And so he was great to learn from.
Sure.
And very plugged in with J.H. Ranch, if you're familiar with that. Okay, so his wife's family started J.H. Ranch.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So just awesome guy. And we had a guy named Earl Fairley here at Arc Realty, was like a CEO or something with JH Ranch, and we're close. And so anyways, we had some connections. Chad Johnson is the coach's name. And it was just great connecting with him and learning from him, who had built, he took over a family business, built it, you know, tenfold into the millions, sold it. And now he's, you know, a life coach and does this with strategic coach. Him and his wife have like marriage counseling. Just really cool guy.
Man,
learned a ton.
You feel like that propelled you, the coaching program?
Yeah. Getting structured, getting outside of the real estate industry and just going for, hey, here are guys that are making $100 million in the same class as me, taking advice and following this structure and succeeding. Who am I to say it's not going to work? Right.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, let me just come in and do it.
What's next? So there's a lot of irons in the fire. There's a lot of things going on and like, what's next in your vision?
Continuing to build the real estate team, the realtor team at ARC.
Okay.
So I just had an agent. We haven't talked about this, but a golden handoff kind of idea.
Yeah.
That I kind of teased you with.
Tell me. Let's do that. Tell me what the golden handoff is before we go into the vision.
Yeah. So not an original idea, and you'll learn. I haven't done those. I've just stolen ideas from people more successful. We're in a time in the real estate industry where majority of agents are 60 plus.
Okay.
They've been doing it for years and they're phasing out. The idea or concept of selling your realtor business that's not a thing that people do most of the time. It's every now and then, but most of the time. So this guy named Nick out in like Oregon or Washington wrote a book called The Golden Handoff that says, hey, instead of that agent selling a little less, and then just disappearing, catch them on the front end and say, hey, let me continue to serve your database. Like, you get to know my team, see my process, see what value we bring, and let me transition and take over and continue to work your database and pay your referral fee for it, to where you know your people are taken care of because you trust and understand me and my team, and you still get to make money and you can go sit on the beach. Mm. And it just like that hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, I'm over here trying to just get one more client a month and just trying to scale one at a time. And I'm like, that's a cheat code. Like, if I go and find an agent who knows, likes, and trusts me and my team and is looking to wind down or make a change and just doesn't want to do anymore but has a crazy business, I mean, I could double my business overnight.
Right.
Right? And so that's what we've done. And the coolest thing is, and so Ann March joined us. Okay. And she had no intent, is not slowing her business down at all. It's just wild how it happened. We've worked together for 10 years. She's incredible. She has an opportunity to go down and start, be the sales lead for the new Margaritaville across from the wharf at Orange Beach. Her business is rocking and rolling. I mean, she's killed it here for 20 years here in Birmingham.
Okay.
And she's like, my husband just retired from UAB. We want to take this opportunity. I have a condo down there. They love the beach. She goes, but I don't want to let all my people just kind of be high.
We could talk about the people I want to, but there's also 20 years of like business that those people are still buying and selling homes.
Yeah. And the cool thing is, so we're completely different age bracket. Her client demographic is something that I don't resonate with.
You can't touch.
Or like, right. It's, you know, I'm mid-30s, young family, right, buying their second or third house. And every now and then I'll help a friend's parents, right? But that's just, I'm not plugged into that demographic. And so it's really cool to be able to come in with Ann and provide value there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's been awesome.
So Golden Handoff is just for, is specifically for real estate agents. Is that what you're saying?
That's what the big book is written for, but I take that concept and apply it anyway, right?
You could do it to another business, couldn't you?
Yeah, the thing, so here's what's unique about it is realtors don't typically sell their book of business. Mm. Everyone else does.
Sure.
You go buy a business. It's very uncommon to go just take over a business and pay referral out of future business.
Mm.
And that's what we're doing.
That's what you're doing. Yeah. One of the things that I know that we haven't talked about yet was, how does your relationship and your relationship with Jesus and your faith intertwine in this business world? Mm-hmm. Because business in some ways can be a little bit, quote, cutthroat, quote, you know, malicious. How is your relationship with Jesus played a factor in all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, always evolving. But man, the time I finally realized that none of it's mine.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's good.
It was just like, boom, it doesn't matter. It's not about the money. It's not about the things or the toys or right. Cause none of it's mine. It's about serving other people.
Yeah.
And Rachel was a big part of that kind of like, hey, recognize this. Right. Yep. And it's cause I was just like, gotta make money.
Yeah.
It's funny how my business, the growth and success of it skyrocketed.
Yeah.
When I changed the focus from, I gotta make a dollar to, how can I best serve this person?
Sure.
And how can I be a reflection of God? It was incredible.
Yeah.
And that was it, man.
And so
everything that I do, it's like I said in the beginning of this podcast, it is either, it's going one, every action that I take, every decision I make is not neutral. It goes one direction or the other. Yeah. It's either going closer to God or away from God.
Correct.
Right. And I make that mistake all the time. Like I do not choose the right path all the time. Right. But that's on my brain anytime especially when I come into a tight spot of like, man, is this self-serving or is this serving them?
Yeah.
Right. And you know, 15 years ago, Blake is like, I'm taking that.
Doing
Let's go.
This.
Right.
Sure.
But now it's like, man, we're like, I'm here to help people and to provide value to people and to love people. And that's every day.
So I'm going to tell a story before I ask my next question. So we had a deal probably 3 years ago where someone wanted me to invest in a marijuana company. And the numbers were astounding. There was already a lot of like groundwork laid. So it wasn't like a fresh new business. Mm-hmm. It was going to be very, very good financially. But I just couldn't do it. I just don't. Now, listen, I know there's people out there that, there are great people that are involved in the marijuana business and all that good stuff. But like, I just couldn't do it from a moral perspective. Again, not because I think it's wrong, but like, I just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been approached about a business deal that you had to say no to because of a value standpoint?
Yeah. Yeah. Less about the deal, not industry specific, more people specific.
Mm.
Right. Which is tough. Cause on one end, it's an opportunity to go in and be impactful to that person and sure, hopefully. But on the other end, I see how you operate and the decisions you've made in the past, and that just doesn't line up with how I operate.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter if you're making $10 or $10 million, like that doesn't line up for me. It's not about the money, right? that didn't line up for me. That's not how, it's not the reputation I want. That's not what I want to be associated with.
Yeah. I had a deal like that. We had a guy introduce me to a flipper and wanted to partner on a deal together. And we talked for, it sounds awful. We talked for 5 minutes on the phone. And I was just like, this ain't the guy for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be married to this dude. Mm-hmm. When I say married, everybody knows what I mean. And, you know, when you're doing business with someone, you're married to them. Yeah. And so I didn't want to do that. So I asked this question again, but I cut you off earlier. Mm-hmm. What's next? Give me a vision of what's the next. What would you like? We all know that our plans are great until God says, I want you to go here.
Yeah.
What do you see for the next 3, 5, 7 years for you? What's next?
Yeah. So the Blake Schultz team, being a realtor, grows. Mm-hmm. It's growing. I'd love to see it start grossing 7 figures.
Okay.
And that includes more people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe not agents on my team necessarily, like from a sales role. So that's TBD, but I want to see that grow. That's my focus, and I love doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see warehouse commercial purchase or development, long-term hold.
Mm.
Don't really have goals for single-family, multifamily there. I like the warehouse space. And I'm really interested in a business acquisition, whether it's the equipment rental, pest control, whatever industry it's in. I want to really put into practice the concept of kind of the built to sell model, to where it's started or purchased with all the underwriting in place. It doesn't require me.
Mm.
And I really want to put that in practice. What I don't want to do is go bootstrap another business and pull myself 80 hours a week again, away from my family, doing all that. Cause then I'm already there. Like, I don't need that. Right.
Yeah.
I'd love the opportunity to go build an existing business and empower more people.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go just create more work for myself.
I told somebody the other day, I'm 45, got 3 kids. And so the next 10 years of my life are going to be centered around, it's not centered. There's a heavy, heavy focus on being with, seeing, and growing my humans.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a full-time job? Yeah. But can you also do other things? Yes. So for me, starting something else at this stage is out the window. Now, when I was 35, like you, I was in it. Like, I was the bootstrapper. So you started earlier than I did. But do I have the bandwidth? Yes. But if I have that much bandwidth, something else has got to get cut out. I'm not cutting out the humans in my house and my wife. I'm not doing it. And so, I'm with you on the business acquisition side. The thing that I would love to find is I'd love to find an operator that wants to grow and have their own thing and be with them. Like, I can't go operate a business right now.
Take a COO.
I would love that. Yeah. So I'd love to find someone, because we've had a couple business things come up that were like, we couldn't do because we didn't have the operator. And I'm not going to go step into that role. My schedule in my life is full enough now to where that is not like an option for me.
Mm-hmm.
But like finding an operator out there that wants to go hustle and kill it, but yet have some owner and equity in the thing is what I would love to be transitioning into next. Obviously, I want to continue to buy more real estate. I love multifamily. I want to continue to do that. I love our investing. I love our fund. I love infinite banking. I love the finance part. The finance part is what really excites me right now, mm-hmm. is working with people financially. What else? What else? Anything else for you before we get out of here? Any questions for me? I always ask people if they have anything for me.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that growth, because my mind goes to vertical integration, mm-hmm. which I've kind of teased and played with a little bit, but it's being a realtor, you're exposed to, I mean, construction, title, closing attorney, termite, pest control, the roofing, you know, there's so many different, and I just see like opportunity.
Sure.
Right. And I just want to own all of it and just keep it all together. But for you, so financial advising and that world is maybe indirectly at best related to real estate.
Sure.
So is there a way to pull those together, or can you vertically integrate that somehow?
You're talking about the financial part and the real estate?
Yeah, I mean, your interest. So, like, yeah. We're 5-10 years from now, like, what you want to grow and business-wise, can that vertically integrate? Or do you see a third opportunity, like a cleaning service or whatever it is that integrates?
I told Kendall this the other day, and I love helping people make money. I really enjoy that. The financial part of what we've been doing the last 3 or 4 years has been wonderful. I love that. The thing, the linchpin there that I can see really thriving is helping people from a financial standpoint, but also not only putting them in things, in whether it be annuities, whether it be, you know, infinite banking or whatever, but also showing them what alternative investing is, mm-hmm. whether it be syndications, whether it be buying portions of businesses, whatever, like helping people understand that there's more to the financial freedom path than working 40, 50, 60 hours a week, putting your money in the market and trying to prepare for retirement. Like, mm-hmm. how do you take the what you're making now and use it now for investing, for freedom, for the things that life brings? Mm-hmm. So marrying those things is what I really am spending time on right now.
Yeah.
Is getting people to understand the financial part, because people, and I've found this out, people in this world are extremely financially illiterate. Mm. And I'm raising my kids to understand that so that they're not that, but like helping people understand what they can do with their money, but then also giving them a place to make that money work in a positive way. Mm-hmm. So those are the two areas that I'm trying to like bring together right now that I really, really love.
I'm gonna put you on the spot a little bit, but do you have any specific examples that you're doing with your kids to give them that education?
Yeah, I do. So two things. So we dollar cost average I do love the market. So let me say this. I am not against the stock market. Like, we dollar cost average every month, and we've dollar cost averaged since I was 18.
What is that?
Dollar cost averaging is putting money in the market into what they call index funds, or things that are very, very, I hate to say the word safe, but they're safe things. So like, yes, I have Apple and yes, I have Google, but like we buy large index funds where I'm buying the whole market.
Okay.
Okay. So there's a lot less risk there, because like, for example, NVIDIA goes down because of something, but Apple skyrocketed and Google stayed flat, and Tesla's done what Tesla's done the last month and a half.
Yeah.
So like, instead of buying those individual things, we buy large portions of the market. Okay. So the compound effect and the consistency effect of what you've talked about earlier, mm-hmm. is, so we give money to the market every month. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that money goes and buys shares into the market. Okay. So let's just use the $2,000. So $2,000 a month, it will go and buy X number of shares of this general market. Okay. Mm-hmm. And say that share price is $100, just for argument's sake. And I buy it this month and I buy, you know, $2,000, 20 shares at $100 a piece, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, next month, the market may be down to 80. That may be down to 80. So the next month I buy them at 80. Well, then say in 3 months, it's up to 120. Mm-hmm. So I've created value there. So I bought some at 100, I bought some at 80. Well, now it's at 120. So what I've done is I've just created more wealth that way. So mm-hmm. that's dollar cost averaging.
Okay.
Okay. So we dollar cost average every month with our kids. So our kids have what they call a brokerage account, which mm-hmm. is Jonna's got an account, George's got an account, and Tegan's got an account. And now we give money to that every month, and we teach them, hey, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. Okay. Some of them understand it more than others just because their brain works different. Mm-hmm. That's number one. The second thing is, and from a business standpoint, I'll encourage you with your kids. You got two.
Yeah.
So you own your own business, so you can do this. So we pay our kids $15,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Okay. With that $15,000 a year, it's not federally taxed. It's a law. It's a tax law. So they're not federally taxed on that money. Now you got to pay state income tax, and you got to pay payroll tax. So we pay them through our business, and it goes from the business account to their checking account. Each of them have a separate checking account. And then that money then goes into an infinite banking account or a cash value life insurance account. So they're going to have that money that they can use whenever, however, they want to. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I control that account, and one of them may be ready at 20, and one of them may not be ready till 40, mm-hmm. depending on their, you know, financial acuity. So we do that. So number one, so in essence, I get a $45,000 write-off on my business mm-hmm. because I'm paid an employee.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're doing that, but that money doesn't go to them. It goes straight into their infinite banking account. Mm-hmm. They've got that money that they can use if they need something. For example, I've bought John a car through that account. Mm-hmm. So instead of paying cash, I run the money through my policy. That policy just continues to keep growing, compounding, mm-hmm. compound effect. So we've got those two avenues, and I teach them about those things as we go. Now, it's not whiteboard, 45-minute session twice a week.
Right.
It is car rides. Mm-hmm. It is the kid asking about, hey, are we rich? You know, I got that question the other day. Are we rich? It's like, rich is kind of relative, but like, you know, we probably make more than most people in America for sure. Mm-hmm. But are, you know, can daddy not go to work? No, daddy can't go to work. So it's a constant intentional conversation mm-hmm. that you're having all the time. 85% of the time, it's spurred by their questions. Mm-hmm. So great. And here's the key thing with that. The key thing with that, Blake, is bringing other people into the fold when they have questions.
Okay.
So for example, I called Mark Melikar, who's one of my best friends, who's our financial advisor, our market financial advisor. So I called Mark because Tegan was asking about the difference. He's 13. He was asking about the difference in a stock and a bond. I explain it, and I can explain it great. But Mark is a third party mm-hmm. that's a, quote, expert.
Yeah.
Manages hundreds of millions of dollars. He answered it. So we're in the car going to basketball. It's an 18 or 20-minute ride. Pick up the phone, call Mark. Hey, T's sitting right here. Explain the difference in a stock and a bond. Mm-hmm. Boom. He does it. Then, okay, so tell me about a dividend, Mark. What's the difference in a dividend and a stock and a bond? And he goes into that. I'm bringing my tribe in to help educate my kids.
Yeah.
And it has to be intentional. Mm-hmm. There's two things that we have to talk to our kids about that our parents didn't talk to us about as much. Number one is money. Mm-hmm. Without financial education, you will probably end up in a ditch. Mm-hmm. You know, figuratively.
Right.
Okay. Number two is sex. Mm. Totally different podcast, but we got
we won't go there today.
Yeah, we won't go there today. But those are the two things that can damage our humans
if
not being extremely intentional about them.
Yeah.
So the financial part, we talk probably 10 times more about it than other parents do. My kids know how much money we make from a salary standpoint. They understand investments. They don't get all of it, but they're exposed to all of it.
Yeah.
So that is like, that's a long, long answer.
No, I like that. What age did you start?
I mean, I started as young as I possibly can. Yeah. The 9-year-old, she don't get it yet. Mm-hmm. Okay? She's the one that asked the other day if we're rich. My 16-year-old gets it good, but not great. Mm-hmm. My 13-year-old gets it great.
Nice.
So the answer to that question of when do you start is you start as early as possible, mm-hmm. but you got to keep having conversations even though they're going over their head.
Yeah.
You know, but I'll say this. The 13-year-old, he knows more about P&Ls and finance than most adults. And it's because of the drip of the conversation that we have mm-hmm. all the time. One wants to be a marine biologist, but is hung up, honestly, but I can't make any money doing that. And I was like, hey, look, you need to go do what you want to do and do what you love and do what you really enjoy doing. And then how do we implement the financial part into your lifestyle to create either outside or integrated into that thing? Mm-hmm. Because you can, listen, there's enough money out there. You can make money doing anything.
Yep.
You really can. So that's where we live.
Yeah.
As far as talking to our kids about all that stuff. So it's pretty, pretty big deal for us.
Yeah.
So
I like that, especially bringing in the other side. Cause that's, I mean, we're 4-1, so we're pretty far
away from it. You're always from it.
But I alluded to earlier, each kid has a house and it's going to be paid off by a tenant by their 18. That's mm-hmm. going to be their college fund or wherever they want to go. But it's not just like, here's a gift. It's, Stella's out there picking up pine cones.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, you got to earn it. At some point, we haven't even talked numbers yet. At some point, it's going to be, hey, here's the spreadsheet of the house. And mm-hmm. here's what we paid for it. And here's the cash I've got in it.
Yeah.
And here's the monthly rent. And here's the expenses. And here's HVAC. So kind of understand. And again, that's my way of teaching because that's what I know, right? I couldn't tell you the difference between a stock and a bond. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I've got people who do.
Sure.
And I like that. And that's not something that I've like, hey, we need to be intentional about this.
You got to be intentional with it. And it always helps to have another human breathe life into your kids.
Yeah.
The thing I would encourage you this, are you paying your kids now?
No, I like that idea.
I would start it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because I know they're one in or four, mm-hmm. but what can you do from a visual standpoint on a social media or on a website or whatever that, mm-hmm. you know, the BlakeSchultz.com. What is your website?
Yeah.
What? Let's go. BlakeSchultz.com. And like, where is there an about page with your family on there? And is there a picture of you, a video of you and your 1 year old showing a house to so-and-so? And mm-hmm. you can recapture 30 grand a year and then you could funnel that 30 grand into something.
Yeah.
That can create wealth for them down the road along mm-hmm. with the house. So we don't have a house, but our quote house is their IBC account.
Yep.
So at 25, each kid's IBC account will have about $220,000 of cash value. Mm-hmm. Now, will they be given the keys at 25? Maybe.
Yeah. Depends.
Depends on the kid. Yeah. So, I think that kid literacy, financial literacy is incredibly important.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So, it's nothing I grew up with.
Me neither.
We were fine, but
yeah.
I just knew save and don't spend.
That's right. So. Prepare for retirement. So, yep. This has been great. You've done great. Really appreciate
Thanks
it.
For having me.
Where can someone find you on any of these things that they want to get in touch with you about real estate, whether it be business, whatever? Where can someone find you?
Call me 205-451-9858, BlakeSchultz.com.
Yep.
HartmanCastle.com. We're out there.
Yeah.
So should be easy to find.
We didn't talk about the short term rental. Here's what we're going to do. We will, This was so good, and there's so many other things we can talk about. I want to do another one of these in 3, 4, 5, 6 months, just so we can go down that rabbit hole. But thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks.
All right.